This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Create at State, making connections that count. In this interview, Associate Professor of Marine Biology, Dr. Paul Sickle, talks about research involving parasites and the world's oceans. Dr. Sickle has students that are working on research around the globe on a year-round basis. And this is my interview with Paul Sickle. Tell us about the research that you've been working on. I guess before we do that, though, what got you so interested in this line of research? Why are you passionate about it?
So let me start off with sort of the ocean thing in general, and then I'll tell you about the parasite work in particular, how I got into that.
Sure.
So I grew up, as a kid in Southern California. My parents were avid campers, so we used to go on camping trips all the time. And I would take time to go out and, collect things and explore. And so I got the bug really early when I was like maybe 5 years old. I used to watch a lot of nature programs like Jacques Cousteau and Wild Kingdom and National Geographic specials. And so I was really interested in animals and in nature, and I wanted to know with that. I wasn't quite sure what. I was really interested in reptiles and amphibians initially. But then in seventh grade, I took a free diving course, learned how to snorkel and free dive at Catalina Island off California, off LA. And that just completely changed things for me. One trip to a kelp forest off Southern California in seventh grade is like, okay, ocean is it. That's what I'm going to do. So since early seventh grade, I knew I wanted to do work in the ocean. I wanted to be a marine scientist or a marine photographer or something along those lines. And so that's where it went. So I started off as an undergraduate working in a shark lab at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, working on sharks, hammerhead sharks and great white sharks. And for 4 years I did that work, actually. It was really cool work, but I learned that sharks are really hard to study because they're really big and they move really far away. And all the electronics you use to study them invariably break at the worst time. So I thought, I'm going to do my graduate work on something smaller. So I ended up working on damselfish reproduction in reefs. And from there, I got into parasites. And what got me into that is I was watching these fish spawn at dawn, and I noticed that the female was taking breaks to visit cleaning stations. Cleaning stations are places where you have a fish or a shrimp that removes parasites off the outside of another fish. And I couldn't figure out why the female was doing it at that time of day. This is at dawn, like right before sunrise. She was doing this. And why end up spawning to do this? Why not do it later? I started looking at what it was the cleaners were removing from the fish. And it turns out there are things called naphid isopods, which are little tick-like parasites. And that was what the cleaners were eating off the fish. So I thought, whatever it is that's causing this behavior has to relate to somehow the naphids. I started looking at when they are active, what time of day. It turns out night and dawn is the peak. So these fish are waking up in the morning full of parasites, going to the cleaning station, getting cleaned. And so from there, I realized that there was this whole gap in our understanding of parasites and coral reef systems in general. And so we started looking at that, and it's sort of taken off from there. So that was like a whole sort of career change for me, that observation.
Right, and kind of worked on your master's, PhD, and were able to do all that and then come over here?
So my master's and PhD were actually in looking at reproductive behavior in fishes, not in parasites at all. But where I did where I got into parasites was during a postdoc and in Barbados, actually, through McGill University. I was there on a postdoc for 2 years, and that's when I started noticing this weird behavior and then got into parasites from there.
All right, so tell us about what you do by way of how you work with students, because when some people talk about lab work, they may use the ABI on campus, mm-hmm. Arkansas Biosciences Institute building on campus, or they have other, maybe rice fields or the things. You have a unique lab, if you will. Kind of tell us about what research you're doing and how you're, having students involved in this work.
Yeah. So our work involves coral reef systems, and of course there are no longer reefs in Arkansas. Those are long gone. But so we have to go to where the reefs are. And so that not only gives us the chance to study what we study, but it gives us a chance to expose students to those environments, many of whom have never experienced those before. So we work in our key bases of operation are the Caribbean, Eastern Caribbean, so Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, that area, the Philippines, Australia, and South Africa. So I have students who are based at those locations, and then I have students who are based here in Arkansas, and all of those students interact with one another. They help each other, they collaborate, and so it's this international network of students at these sites. So we study the same questions at all the sites. We study host-parasite interactions in coral reef systems, but there's some slight differences at each place that allow us to make some interesting comparisons. So our laboratory, if you will, are the reefs, the coral reefs. We do some traditional laboratory stuff here, even including at ABI, some of the molecular work we do here, but all the samples are collected at our reef sites.
Dr. Paul Sickle joins me here on the Created State podcast here on KASU. So kind of give us an example of what you all would do if, like, say you have some graduate students in those different areas, they're all kind of working together in that. Kind of give us like a sample or an example of how this all works, how everyone coordinates, and how you all start working on the research part of that, if you don't mind, please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So each student has a thesis or dissertation project that is a spin-off or a branch off of the broader project that we have funding for. And so all of the students are working on something that is somewhat related, but in a different location and with a slightly different focus. And so we'll have, and the active seasons for that work is often different. So, for example, in the Caribbean, our peak research season is like April to August. In the Philippines, we have to work around the intermonsoonal period, so that's like spring and then a little bit in fall. So there's some offset there that allows students, say, from the Philippines to come over to our Caribbean sites and work with our Caribbean team, or it allows students from South Africa to come and work with us, or our students from here to go to Australia and work on the Great Barrier Reef system. So our students are physically going to these different locations, working with the other students on site. And then when they're not working together, they're exchanging information via email, or we have weekly lab meetings to discuss issues. So it's very interactive. It's really cool, actually.
How many students do you have working in this?
Oh, if you just count ones that are my students that I'm responsible for, it's about, I think it's up to 12 now. Mm-hmm. Internationally. Then we've got other students from other labs who are also interacting with us. So the total comes up to about maybe 20 who are part of our team, either directly or indirectly.
And what is it like working with them, especially when you have such a large, and I'm going to use the air quotes, lab, because it is literally an international lab. Yeah. I was like kind of working and coordinating all of that work.
The coordination is very difficult because the projects are going on at some level or another year round. And the time, the time of day is very different in all the places, right? So if I'm, say, in the Caribbean and I'm just waking up, well, that's nighttime in the Philippines. And so there's never a time when I don't have an email or a text message or something from a person at another site when I'm at one of the other sites. So it's hard to sort of have any time off where I'm not like thinking about this. So it's really, literally every day I've got things that I'm dealing with in terms of logistics at the different sites.
How do the students like this?
They love it because they get to interact with people from other countries, visit other countries. They have additional expertise they can draw on. So I even have two of my students got married, one from the Philippines and one from the Virgin Islands ended up getting married. So they love the interaction. They love the camaraderie. And they love sort of being part of a bigger, international team.
And I would imagine also it's not bad digs to work in some of those places of the world,
It's not bad. I mean, we don't live in luxury hotels like the tourists
right,
do.
Right.
We live in like little shacks, often usually without air conditioning. And so it's not luxury by any means, but the excitement is just being in the water and seeing things that nobody else sees. And other people might go in the water and have the same things going on, but they don't really know what to look for. And so we look at things that nobody else really looks at. And so we're sort of privileged to be able to see that and experience it. And that alone makes it worth it.
Now, are they taking equipment or are these things they can actually see with the naked eye? Or how does that work? What they're looking for?
Yeah, so the parasites themselves, it depends on which one. Some are big enough you can see with the naked eye quite easily. Some are big enough that they can see with the naked eye now, but my eyes can't anymore. They can say, I see one there, I know it's there, and they can see it, I can't. And other things are so small, we really need microscopes to look at. So it depends on what kind of parasite it is, but it always involves catching, using fish or some kind of trap to collect the parasite and then look at it in the lab.
Okay. And so the overall goal of this, what do you hope that this research will do by way of what are you trying to accomplish here
with
this?
Yeah, so really sort of transforming our understanding of the ecology of these systems. So the vast majority of ecologists look at the big things that they can see. They look at, in this, our case, look at the fish maybe, or sea turtles, or even the corals, things they can see. But the things they don't see are really running the show. They're kind of like the roadies at a concert. Like, without the roadies, that show does not happen. So without the parasites, the whole system, you know, falls apart. So they're involved in trophic interactions and transfer of energy. They can cause diseases, which increases impacts mortality rates. They can affect the behavior of their hosts. They're doing all these little things that ecologists up until recently have completely ignored or just not even thought about. And so we're really changing the way ecologists view these ecosystems. And we're also, unfortunately, now looking at how those interactions and therefore the entire reef ecosystem is impacted by human activity. So our work has sort of evolved into looking at the effects of climate change on host parasite interactions, the effects of overfishing on host parasite interactions, the effect of major storms on these interactions, and then therefore through those interactions, the entire ecosystem.
Yeah, that's something I was going to ask about. I know that someone who loves the ocean like you do have to be very, very concerned about, you know, certain things that are taking place.
Yeah.
When you think about that and the overall health of the ocean and that, what concerns you the most?
Yeah, so I would say that the coral reef biologists and polar biologists are probably on average the most depressed group of biologists, because they see things directly you know, in their day-to-day work that's happening. So oftentimes it can be very depressing, actually. When you go out to like a pristine reef and the Great Barrier Reef, it's got full of coral, and then you come back the next year and like all the coral is dead, bang, from a bleaching event. It's like there's no other cause of that besides warming seawater. That's what causes those vast bleaching events, and that's caused by climate change. So I sort of use that as inspiration to try to facilitate change in behavior and in policies that will help fix those problems, because I see what's happening. And I also try occasionally to suspend my understanding of that process, that damage, and just enjoy, you know, those interactions on the reef. I try. It's a balancing act between sort of despair and just the sort of thrill of seeing those organisms interact.
Yeah. And so going back to the students, I know that the students learn a lot from each other, and you know, they're going through this project. You say it's year round, it never really ends. What do you learn from the students as you go along with this?
They keep me updated on technology in particular, and on social media, for example. You know, they actually run our social media program. They're the ones who do all the postings and tell me like when something should be done, how it should be done. So they keep me updated on what's modern and current in the technology and social media world, and just their curiosity. You know, they'll ask questions that I hadn't really thought about, you know. So they'll see something, they'll ask the questions like, you know, that's really interesting. I never really thought about it from that perspective. So they just bring a fresh perspective, a fresh energy, and skill sets that I don't have. And so that really keeps it the whole team sort of functioning at a high level.
Dr. Paul Sickle joining me here on the Created State podcast on KASU. Do you see how something, the work that you're doing, might be able to lead to possible education efforts to be able to educate people about the health of the ocean and what man can do and some of these things? Could you see some of the work that you all are doing kind of contribute to something like that?
Absolutely, yeah. So we do a lot of interviews with international and local media. We've been on the BBC. I was a consultant for Blue Planet 2. I work with a reggae musician friend of mine on an initiative we call Reggae for Reefs, using reggae music to promote the effects of promote awareness of the effects of climate change on island where there are coral reefs and where people are subject to rising sea level, but who don't have much of a voice. And so, I give talks to, say, Kiwanis and Rotary clubs here. Any chance I get, anytime somebody asks me to talk about this stuff, I talk about it, because I have a unique experience that most people don't have. And I feel if I don't offer that, then I'm doing our planet a disservice. I mean, sort of the role of scientists in a tribe is to produce information and then share it with the rest of the tribe. It's a two-part endeavor. And so I feel like I can't just be, you know, one of those who acquires the information. It's part of my responsibility as a scientist to share it as broadly as I can so that people can benefit from what I do.
So as part of an education thing, what would you recommend that people do to take better care of the ocean, to kind of take better care of things? What would you suggest?
Let's see. Well, the biggest issue right now is climate change. And so really, and I don't think it's enough for people to just take their own individual actions, because we really need political will to go along with it to facilitate those efforts. So really you need to sort of lean on your representatives to promote legislation that'll help deal with the issue. Obviously the things you can do in your own personal life that'll help, carpool, walk, bike, don't use plastic. Those are all things that you can do. You'd be amazed at how much plastic is in the ocean from sources that are way far from, very far from the ocean, and it all ends up in the food chain. So when you eat fish, you're eating plastic because it's everywhere. So so you really need to sort of look at individual actions, but also try to convince your political representatives that they need to act as well. It's going to take a global issue. It's kind of like those movies where you have like an alien attacking planet Earth, right? Everybody gets together and fights the problem. That's where we are now. We have everybody together, politicians down to every citizen, focusing on this issue to solve it. Because what's happening in the ocean is sort of a harbinger of what's happening or will happen to other ecosystems that we depend on. So it really is about us and saving our quality of life.
So what affects the ocean will affect everybody. That's from what
right.
You're saying.
Yep. The ocean is, 70% of the planet. And so we all depend on it. Whether we live next to it or not, we were influenced by it. So
how can we find out more about, if people want to kind of see, the social media posts and some other things that your students are doing and all that, how can people get more information on what you're doing?
Yeah. So our Twitter is Navid Nation. And the spelling of that is GNATHIID. And then the nation is GNATHION. So capital G Navid and capital G Nation. Navid Nation is our Twitter. So we post, when we're out in the field, we post through that. We also have a Facebook page of the same name, Navid Nation. So that's probably the best way.
Associate Professor of Marine Biology at Arkansas State University is Dr. Paul Sickle, and he's on the Created State Podcast. To hear more interviews like this one, you can subscribe to the Created State Podcast at the Created State Podcast page at KASU.org. It's also available on iTunes or Google Play or on Spotify. You can also listen on the NPR app. And tell others about the Created State Podcast and leave us a review, as we'd love to hear from you. You're listening to A-State Connections on KASU.